Listening Library presents Nightfall by Jake Halpern and Peter Kujawinski. Read for you by Nicholas Guy Smith. Chapter 1. Merrin walked into the wind and felt it gently push back. A few more steps and she'd be at the edge of the cliff. Her focus was on the thistle, the prickly green plants that crunched beneath her feet. What would happen to these plants during the years of night? Would they wither and die? Or would they simply lie dormant, waiting for the first rays of sunlight to peek up from the horizon? She had asked those who had been through this before, but they refused to discuss it. No one talked about the night, even though it was almost upon them. She stopped near the precipice. The water below was dark, almost black, and it stretched everywhere, like a liquid version of the sky. In the last year, as the sun had begun its final descent, the water had gone from blue-green to iridescent blue, and from there it grew steadily darker. A hint of its fluorescence remained, but now it provoked a shiver instead of a smile. Merrin took a deep breath of the cold sea air. When the sun vanished, it would get even colder. Everything would freeze. At least, that's what people at school said. In any case, by the time that happened, she'd be long gone, along with everyone else in bliss. Only the buildings would remain, silent and empty, entombed in ice. The wind flung Merrin's wavy black hair into her face. She was smaller than other girls her age, but she was stronger than most. Her arms and legs were long and well-muscled, the product of years spent climbing, hiking, and sailing. She had honey-coloured eyes, long lashes, and bronze skin, a striking combination which she inherited from her mother. Her clothing, however, was plain and purely functional, waxed canvas pants, a raw denim shirt, and leather boots. "Has the tide turned yet?" Merrin spun at the unexpected voice. She had been waiting for her friend Line, but instead she saw Pulan, a frail man with paper-thin skin and a bald head marked with brown sunspots. Pulan had lived through several mornings, and his skin bore the proof. His cobalt-blue robe rippled in the wind, revealing a left arm that ended in a stump just above his wrist. "I'm not sure about the tide," Merrin replied. "What do you think?" The old man faced Merrin, his watery eyes looking past her, into the distance. "This is my fourth evening," he said quietly. He tightened the heavy wool scarf wrapped around his neck. "The sun seems to be moving faster and faster with the years." Merrin followed his gaze. The sun had almost disappeared below the horizon. Only a sliver remained visible. The entire western sky was ablaze in magnificent shades of orange and red. A few degrees more and the sun would vanish completely, plunging the island into darkness for the next 14 years. They said this would happen soon, perhaps in a matter of days. It sounded a bit like the end of the world to Merrin, and she still found it hard to believe. The wind blew gently, and Pulan sighed. "It saddens me that I will never see this place again. When I leave here, I expect I won't return." Merrin reached out and touched his arm. The old man turned away from the sea, back toward the island's interior, and grasped her hand. "I've heard movement in the forest," he whispered. "What do you mean?" asked Merrin, worried that Palan may have become lost in his mind. Palan gripped her hand tighter, but did not reply. A muffled shout rang in the distance. "Merrin!" They looked up and watched a teenage boy moving toward them. It was Line. If Palan hadn't been there, she would have run to him, but now she just waved back. When he arrived, Line appeared slightly confused. Palan studied them both, arched an eyebrow, and smiled. Line's dark brown eyes twinkled as he approached Merrin. He was handsome in the way that few boys of 14 are. He was tall and broad-shouldered, with an unkempt shock of reddish-brown hair, high cheekbones, and a cleft chin.
"Elder Palan," said Line.
"Any news of the boats?"
A gust of wind pressed his curly hair flat against his head. Palan straightened, as if the use of the honorific elder reminded him of his role and station.
"Sorry, my boy, I've heard nothing of the boats," said Palan. "But I am not here for that. Come, I'll show you."
He approached the cliff's edge and pointed downward. Merrin and Line followed close behind him and peered over. The face of the cliff was shrouded in shadow, but they could make out several thick white veins coming out of the cliff and running down its side, like a hardened trail of wax from a giant candle.
"It's ice," said Palan.
It was colder at the edge of the cliff, and his shoulders began to tremble.
"My father brought me to this place as a boy. The ice always begins here. It squeezes out of the rock, and then, they say, it spreads until it covers everything. The island turns to ice."
Merrin and Line stood close together near Palan. Line's fingers grazed Merrin's. Palan leaned over several inches more.
"Somewhere down there is the hag."
His voice turned hoarse.
"At times, when the waves break just right, you can see her."
He took a step back from the cliff and smiled with great contentment, as if recalling a particularly fond memory. Merrin and Lion looked down at the water. It seemed no different than before. Palan often spoke in riddles, in the manner that those of such age do.
"I'd like to get a better view of that ice," said Line, taking off the coil of rope slung across his shoulder and pushing up the sleeves of his sweater.
His forearms and biceps were tan and muscled from years of rock climbing.
"As you wish," said Palan, "but be careful. Ice is much slicker than rock."
Suddenly impatient, Merrin and Line said goodbye. As Palan shuffled back to town, Line set up the rope, tying it securely to a small brass ring jutting from the rock. Merrin and Line had been climbing the cliffs that form the island's perimeter their entire lives, and recently it had been just the two of them. Going off unchaperoned was frowned upon, but at the moment the town was too consumed with other matters to pay them any mind. Just before beginning, they checked to make sure they were each securely fastened to the rope. Merrin faced Line. She tucked a lock of hair behind his ear so it didn't dangle over his eyes.
"You were late," she said,
scowling as if she were cross with him.
"Just a minute or two," he said with a grin.
Line shook his head so that his hair fell back over his eyes.
"It won't happen again."
They descended steadily until the ocean spray began to mist their legs. The rays of the setting sun could not reach this area, and it was darker than they expected. Still, they were able to see the veins of ice glowing in the murky twilight. Line continued down several feet until the ocean spray...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?